Welcome to the Plain Label Podcast, episode 27. Hello, and welcome to episode 1 of year 2 of the Plain Label Podcast, otherwise known as episode 27. I am your host, Eric Williams, and along with me, I have my good friend and co-host, Rachel Cruz.
Hello, Clary.
Before we started the show, there are a couple of things that I wanted to mention. First, this is our 1 year anniversary, so yay us, I guess.
Congratulations!
Yeah, way to go, Cruz. Secondly, Rachel and I do have an announcement. We're having a baby. So you can look for Dobby Williams Cruz later in the year. Actually, our real announcement is we're going to shake things up a little bit as to how we're going to do the shows. So for this show, it's going to stay the same. We're going to pick a theme and discuss movies based on that theme. Some of the themes are going to take maybe more than a couple of months, kind of like we did with Disney. But what we're going to do differently is our Podshot episodes. What I've been doing up to this point is I'll take a film and discuss that film with the kind of a rotating number of people. We're still going to do that primarily, but we're also going to add some different topics in there other than just films. So it's supposed to be, you know, one topic, whether it's a book, a TV show, or a movie, and we're actually going to start doing that. So in 2013, we're going to talk about 3 different books and 3 different TV shows. We're going to talk about 3 books from one of Cruz's favorite authors, John Irving. And our first book show is going to be John Irving's The World According to Garp. So if you want to kind of play along with us, that's what we're going to be taking on first. And as for TV, I actually asked for suggestions on Facebook and had quite a list. But the 3 TV shows that we're going to talk about for 2013 are Luther, Lost, and Sherlock. And for that Sherlock discussion, we're probably going to toss in a comparison with the BBC series and the Robert Downey Jr. films. So that's kind of what's new for the show for 2013. And for this episode, we are beginning our romantic dramas. So last year in February, we talked about romantic comedies and how most of them are shitty. And Cruz came up with your how all of them are the same little formula thing that we did on our second show.
The outline.
Yeah, your outline that you came up with. And so... So we're going to talk about romantic dramas this time, which means that it, you know, sort of takes the love and relationship aspect a little bit more seriously. And while there can be comedy in the film, that's not really the primary goal of the film in most of them. So for this episode, we are going to be talking about The Philadelphia Story, Before Sunrise, Before Sense and Sensibility, and Before Sunset. Before finally getting into our discussion, we would like to mention that we are proud members of the Deliberate Noise Network. Head over to deliberatenoise.com and check out some of the other shows that are over there, including Filmographies, where I am again co-hosting with Cameron Rice as we discuss a new director. We just finished up with David Lynch, and now we're going to start discussing the films of Ang Lee. So that'll be interesting. Yeah, he's got quite a diverse list of films from... Brokeback Mountain,
yeah.
Brokeback Mountain, you know, Love Caution or Lust Caution and Hulk and all kinds of fun stuff. So, Cruiser, let's get into this shit. What do you got for me drink-wise today?
Well, yesterday when I was watching my Ravens win the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm. Congratulations.
I brought some orange juice here, and so now I'm drinking orange beers.
Orange beers?
Yeah, it's like red beer, only you just put orange juice in it instead of tomato juice.
Hmm. I haven't had that before. That sounds like a stomach ache.
It's actually a tailgating drink when you wake up at 10 and you can't think about actually drinking a Bud Light out of a can. You just make it an orange beer and it seems to work better.
Oh, okay.
Not that I know, but somebody told me that.
Theoretically.
Right.
I am going with the wine again, but... about half hour before we started recording, I told the wife that I was kind of in trouble because I didn't really have anything to drink.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually drinking a wine of hers. It is from the Deer Springs Winery, which, as I showed Courtney, we have a little bit of fraud going on because their logo is the same as the Patronus from Harry Potter that Snape and Lily do. So I'm having their Brianna, which is a Nebraska table wine. It is a very sweet. It is a white, and I'm probably just having this one glass because it's kind of making me like it's kind of like a sour grape.
Oh.
So.
What did I say about my Patronus?
Your Patronus would be Captain Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, we're going to go chronologically. So we're going to start with the 1940s, the Philadelphia story.
Afraid of that look. The withering glance of the goddess.
I didn't think that alcohol would... Oh, shut up.
Dinah, stay here.
Oh, please, Mother. Maybe he's going to soccer again.
It's what everybody feels about you. It's what I first worshipped you for from afar.
George, listen.
First, now, and always. Only from a little nearer now. Hey, darling?
I don't want to be worshipped, I want to be loved.
Someday over the rainbow, way up high.
What is this, Connor?
Oh, easy, easy, old man. She's not hurt?
No, no.
Not wounded, Saul, but dead.
Seems the minute she hit the water, the wine hit her.
Now, look here, Connor.
A likely story, Connor.
Hello, Dexter. Hello, George.
Hello, Mike.
You have a good mind, a pretty face, a disciplined body that does what you tell it. You have everything that it takes to make a lovely woman except the one essential, an understanding heart. And without that, you might just as well be made of bronze.
And the night that you got drunk on champagne and climbed out on the roof and stood there naked with your arms out to the moon, wailing like a banshee.
I told you I never had the slightest recollection of doing any such thing.
What in the name of all that's holy am I to do?
Tracy.
Yes, Mike.
Old Parson Parson. He's never seen Kittredge before, has he? Now, look. I got you into this thing, and I'll get you out of it. Will you marry me, Tracy?
Philadelphia socialite Tracy Lord is about to remarry her first husband, C.K. Dexter Haven, arrives at her house. He has with him a tabloid reporter and a photographer, Macaulay Mike Connor and Elizabeth Embry, and he's clearly intent on causing mischief. Tracy is surprised to learn that Mike is a serious writer who works for the tabloids only to earn a paycheck. They're clearly attracted to one another, and the arrival of Tracy's ne'er-do-well father and some rather stern comments on his part leads her to reevaluate her choices and what it is she wants for the future.
That first sentence kind of threw you there for a minute, right, Chris?
Well, just as... Oh, about to remarry her first husband. Yeah.
Yeah, remarry
French
her
joke?
First husband. Yeah.
It's going to give it away.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Ghost.
Okay, so The Philadelphia Story. This is a movie that you own, that you suggested. This is definitely of the ones that we're going to talk about. This is the one that's most focused on comedy.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It's not like the it's actually really not at all like a typical romantic comedy, which I kind of liked.
Yeah.
It is played for laughs a lot, though, like compared to the other ones.
Yeah, definitely.
So since this was a movie that you owned, since I borrowed the DVD from you, how long have you known about this, or is this something that you watch regularly, or what's the deal?
Because I usually will go on AMC, and this is one of them that I was like, oh, I should see what this is about, and then I was probably about five years ago or something, and then my grandma always gets me old movies for my birthday, so I asked for this one, because I really think the dialogue's kind of snarky, and...
It's very Cruise dialogue.
Right. And one of my notes says, I love Katherine Hepburn, by the way, so fuck off. So, I mean, basically, whatever she does, I'm like, good work.
Right. This was a first watch for me. And it was interesting to note that this is my first Cary Grant film, I think.
Really?
Yeah, like I've never seen North by Northwest. I can't think of another movie that Cary Grant's been in that I've seen.
Oh.
So that's kind of a real blind spot for me. And I actually wasn't really that taken with him. I thought that... I thought Katherine Hepburn was really good, and I mean my feelings about Jimmy Stewart are fairly well documented. He's not my favorite, but I thought he was pretty good in this.
Yeah, he's not so
he's not so Jimmy Stewart-y.
Did in this one, I
yeah.
guess.
Yeah. I do like it when they're all shit faced later, but we can get to that in a second.
He's kind of the lead guy in this, but I don't know. I'd have to think of other Cary Grant movies this isn't my favorite Cary Grant movie, but I'll have to think of some other ones that you might like.
My first note is I like laughed for a good couple minutes when he like gives her the pie face, the like hand of the face right at the beginning.
He wants to punch her and he's like, God, I can't hit her.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, 1940s movies and what you can get away with.
Right.
So I paused it and really laughed really hard at that. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm gonna get along with this movie. All right. And then it's not that it lost me from that, but that was kind of like my highlight for a little while.
Right.
That was that moment. My next note here is there's nothing like a little Uncle Grab Ass action.
Yes.
And I was like, what the hell is going on here? Like, all right, it's going to be that kind of movie.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah. But no, I mean, this one and actually both of these that we're going to talk about that you picked today, it's, I find it hard to identify with these characters because in these two that you've picked out today, like especially in this one, it's like the main character, Tracy, she's well off and she's got all these men chasing after her.
Yeah.
And so it's just kind of like, you know, why do I care what happens to her? Because she's going to be fine. She's going to end up with somebody. Like,
right. It's like rich people problem.
Yeah, it's definitely a rich people problem. It's like rich, attractive people problems.
Right. But I mean, like, you wouldn't like it if Katherine Hepburn played some homeless lady and three, like, weird homeless guys were chasing after her. The whole point is that she's classy.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that's that would be interesting though. That's
they just have like a hobo fight and whoever wins like gets her. That's a different ending.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a deleted scene.
That's good. I do like the whole 1940s of it all, like I said, because you know, you do have the her getting pushed down. Later it talks about her getting hit or getting punched and the little Dinah is her name, the little sister.
The little smartass.
Yeah, and she's funny. Like I enjoyed her and I thought she was really funny about talking about how she deserved a smack or whatever and then that sort of thing about Tracy getting hit. She was all for it and I thought that was pretty good. I guess up until the dinner scene where they're all kind of together and we have like all of the main characters all in the same scene. The movie was kind of dragging for me, but once it gets to that scene and then it moves on to the whole drunken evening and all that kind of stuff, then it really started to pick up for me.
Yeah.
Like I really started to like it like that. And I do think that this does have a lot of good lines, like you were saying. And one of them, that I liked that I wrote down was they find out that Jimmy Stewart's character, you know, is a real writer in quotes, and he's talking to Katharine Hepburn and she's talking about reading his book, and he says, well, you know what happens to girls like you who read books like that? You begin to think, and that's no good. And okay. it's stuff like that where I'm like, you know, and he doesn't say it in like a dick way, but depending on how you read it, you could be like, what a fucking asshole.
It almost makes it worse that he doesn't say it. Like, he means it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so what's interesting is, you know, I watch an older film like this one, and it's as if Tracy's like the only woman in the world or something, because even though Mike's love interest or his sort of crush from afar even though she's still there, it's like George and everyone else just worships Tracy, this Katharine Hepburn character.
Oh, right. It's easily about her.
Yeah. Like,
the other people are just kind of there to play up how amazing she is, for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. And so that was one of the things where, you know, it's not like I was put off by that, but I was just like, God, what, you know, what? I get that Katharine Hepburn is attractive, but, like, what is it about her? Like, because I never felt the whole majesty about her. You know what I mean?
Oh, well, I don't know if it's necessarily Katharine Hepburn. I think the whole, like, era of the 40s was, like, about how one girl, you know, like, they just focus on, like, the way this is written, I think. Like, that character, no matter who played it, they were going to have to completely focus on her, and it just happened to be Katharine Hepburn.
Yeah. Do you think that it's just more like the whole package that she embodies? Like, it's not just her and her personality, but it's also like the fact that she is very wealthy and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think like that, as far as the casting goes, they did a good job making her, you know, be Tracy, because, you know, she pretty much played the part to a T.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it had a lot to do with that.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. And once we get into the scene where they all start drinking and all that kind of thing, I really do enjoy it. And we have another line here that I wrote down that I really liked, and they're talking, and I believe it's Liz and the uncle that are having this conversation.
Okay. Right.
And he asks her champagne or cocktails, and she says, champagne, I've never had enough. And he responds by saying, oh, you will tonight. I just think that that's such a dirty old thing to say.
Yeah, you will.
Yeah, and it's just like...
Looking better, aren't I?
Yeah, and it's not like this guy is trying to look like he's in his 40s or something. I mean, he's an old man. Like,
right.
Like, he's an elderly man.
He's like a rich old guy, you know? They got nothing to lose.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, maybe he figures he's in, you know, she's not going to turn him down because he's so rich, but yeah, so they get drunk and you know, throughout the film, it is sort of focused on the Cary Grant character trying to sabotage her current wedding to get her back. And then at this...
No, but I almost don't, I mean, like, yeah.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I'll go.
Like, the first time I watched this, I don't want to give away the ending, but it kind of surprised me.
Yeah.
Like, the whole time I'm like, is he just fucking with her? Like, there aren't really, like, a lot of moments where he's, like, you know, trying to, like, best friend's wedding her or something like that. He kind of just shows up and is a dick and is, like, messing stuff up. And then at the end you're like, oh, that's why. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but what I think is interesting is once they get drunk, then they kind of introduce this Mike and Tracy, this Jimmy Stewart and Katharine Hepburn sort of romance. And they kind of play with that for a little bit. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, why is it that everyone, like, Liz is so obviously in love with Jimmy Stewart. And, you know, he's so drunk and he's kind of chasing after her a little bit. And then you kind of assume that the two of them sleep together, that Katharine Hepburn and Jimmy Stewart sleep together, but you don't really know, because I was watching it and I didn't know if they kind of left that ambiguous because we weren't supposed to know, or if they just couldn't show anything, you know, they just had to leave it ambiguous like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I would assume that she wouldn't bang around with other people, but I don't know.
Yeah, well,
tramp.
Yeah, she, like, at my notice, she seems really trampy. I don't understand why we're supposed to like her so much. You know, but, and then she has a line that I really like that I think needs to make a comeback, and I think you should spearhead this cruise, but you should get, you should get really drunk, and then you say, put me in your pocket, Brad. Because she says that, and then he picks her up and, you know, walks her into wherever because she's too drunk to get there on her own steam.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of like, you know, him carrying her into her bedroom kind of led me to believe that they were doing it. And then they apparently don't. And so I don't know. Like, I just think that historically, I don't think of the 40s as a time where morality was like a, like I always think of as like, you know, the 50s, you have that sort of Leave It to Beaver sort of, you know, wholesome type stuff. And I just kind of lump the 40s into that as well. But I mean, she's kind of, you know, they're playing with the idea anyway, whether she actually goes through it with it or not, of her sleeping with these different guys, or at least being tempted to, or all these guys are wanting her and all that kind of stuff. And so I don't know. So I don't know. And then what I do think is funny is, you know, the next morning, nobody really knows what did or didn't happen. And there's her future husband and her ex-husband and this Mike guy that she may or may not have slept with, and they're all kind of there, and she doesn't really remember because she drank so much, and she says, good golly, why don't you sell tickets? Because she's, you know, there's all these people around and they're all kind of questioning what's going on. And so I kind of like that. I don't know, like I felt the earliness of the film though.
Yeah.
Like, not necessarily that it was unsophisticated or anything like that, but it just felt like they didn't really get into a lot of stuff. They just kind of, like, introduced the theme and then just kind of left it alone.
Right. There weren't a lot of, like, I mean, there was, like, dialogue and talking, but, like, there weren't a lot of explanations as to, like, what people were thinking, I guess. Like, what she was going through. I don't know. But I get what you're saying.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, I think all the performances are good, except for, you know, I didn't care much for Cary Grant, and he's got kind of a thankless role. I mean, he just is playing kind of a jerky, the straight character, you know.
Right. He's got a sweet name though.
Yeah, his long name.
Yeah.
It's C.K. Dexter Haven.
Yeah. That's
yeah. That is pretty sweet. And then one of the things that I thought was weird was, you know, she's talking to her potential husband, and he's he was the most sympathetic for me because he didn't do anything wrong. He's just trying to marry this woman. And he's asking her questions and sort of seeing what's the deal. And she kind of tries to turn things around on him and starts, like, you know, doing that defensive thing where you're getting all these questions asked at you, and you in turn ask questions at that person.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, really. And she's trying to do that to him. And I'm like, wait a minute, like, she's the one that's at fault. Like, this guy hasn't done anything. Stick up for yourself, guy. And he just kind of lets her roll all over him. But
yeah, I don't see him, like, he's not in there enough where you know his, like, motivation. But, like, at the beginning when, like, all he's worried about is, like, their name and their picture in the paper and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if you're supposed to get a feeling of, like, he's just trying to marry up from that because he's, like, new money. And he asks, you know, like, people are going to cover their wedding and stuff like that. But, you know, that's obviously not enough for her to get away with kind of what she did. So I don't know. I mean, like, he's not there, and he doesn't seem like super upset about the whole thing. So I don't know.
Right. Yeah. 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 And then, you know, it is a film from the 40s. So we don't have to really worry about spoilers, but, you know, they do end up, you know, C.K. Dexter Haven and Tracy end up together once again. And, you know, it's just so funny that this film is 70 plus years old and they're talking about all these, you know, relationships that may or may not have happened, and this divorce and remarriage and kind of all this stuff that society is still now dealing with that they're really discussing in the 40s, which I think is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So,
agreed.
So yeah, so this is one that, it wasn't my favorite. It was one that I'm glad I saw though, just kind of, you know, just kind of, especially with the other films that we have here, just to kind of get a different perspective on this type of a story.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's, the Philadelphia Story, unless you have anything else that you want to say about that one, Cruz.
Well, what did you think of the ending then when, like, they get married? You're like, oh, okay.
About, yeah, I was glad that she, you know, as much as I'm like, oh, why are they all fawning over her? I was glad that she did end up with Dexter Haven as opposed to Mike.
Yeah.
Because I would have felt really bad for Liz if Mike would have ended up with Tracy.
Right, and I feel like that's kind of a, like a Shakespeare and comedy ending where everybody hooks up, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's exactly right, yeah. I can see that for sure.
So, yeah, that's probably, you know, how it should have been for sure. Except, yeah. You know, the other guy is just shit out of luck.
That poor fucker, he gets nothing.
Right.
So, yeah. All right, well, you got anything else on Cruz?
No.
Okay, let's move on to our second film, which is my first pick, and it is 1995's Before Sunrise.
All right, I have an admittedly insane idea, but if I don't ask you this, it's just going to haunt me the rest of my life. I have no idea what your situation is, but I feel like we have some kind of connection, right?
Yeah, me too.
Great. So listen, here's the deal. This is what we should do. You should get off the train with me here in Vienna and come check out the town. We just got into Vienna today, and we're looking for something fun to do.
Sprechen Sie English?
Yeah, of course, yeah. Could you speak German for a change?
Now I'm going to call my best friend in Paris, who I'm supposed to have lunch with in 8 hours. Okay?
Okay.
Ring, ring. Pick up the phone.
Hello?
I don't think I'm going to be able to make it for lunch today. I'm sorry. I met a guy on the train, and I got off with him in Vienna. We're still there.
Are you crazy?
Probably. He has beautiful blue eyes, nice pink lips, frizzy hair. I love it. I like to feel his eyes on me when I look away. I couldn't possibly know why a night like this is so important to my life right now. But it is. Since we're never going to see each other again, I don't think we should sleep together.
Let's see each other again.
And I don't want you to break our vow, just so you can get laid. Men are lucky we don't bite off their head after mating. Certain insects do that, you know, like spiders and stuff. Mm-hmm. We at least let you live.
This intoxicating film from director Richard Linklater stars Ethan Hawke as an American backpacker who strikes up a conversation with a lovely fellow traveler, Judy Delphi, on the train to Vienna and persuades her to spend his last day in Europe with him. Wandering the picturesque streets of the Austrian capital, these two share stories of their past and their dreams for the future, ultimately forging a bond that leads to love. Do I get to read the other one?
Yeah, read exactly what I wrote there, too.
The worst review I've ever seen on IMDb. A French grad student named Celine meets an American boy named Jesse on the Budapest-Vienna train. They get off the train in Vienna and hang out for a while. Anonymous. I wonder why that's anonymous.
I just think that's so stupid. They get off the train and hang out for a while.
They just, like, chillax. They take a walk and she has a fanny pack on.
So. Yeah. Okay, so this movie was one that I brought to you. This is one that I've seen very many times. It's one that I own. It is written by Richard Linklater and Kim Krasan, I think is how you say it. The idea for this was based on a night that Linklater spent in Philadelphia with a woman that he met, which I think is kind of interesting. But this was a first watch for you, Cruz. So what? So hit me with this one. What did you think?
I don't know. Mm. It's really you know, it's obviously dialogue based, and it kind of reminded me of like a speech in high school.
Oh yeah, like a
where it's just like two people and they have like an area and they just do dialogue back and forth. You know, granted the dialogue is really good, and when I saw them hook up on the train, and I'm like, oh god, this is gonna be like they desperately love each other. It's like an affair to remember, but it was actually a lot more interesting than I thought it was going to be. I thought they were just going to walk around and I was going to roll my eyes a lot, but you know, him talking, it's just so, I don't know, it's just so weird for me to think that like two people could like fall in love in one day.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as like trying to make that actually work, I think it did a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm. Now this one, I was very nervous as to what you were going to think. Because for as a crotchety old man as I like to pretend to be, I feel like I'm very much more the, like, I feel like I like the more romantic films than you, I feel like.
Well, the thing about romantic films for me, I guess, is if I'm not convinced that the two people actually love each other, then I'm not going to give a shit.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's why romantic comedies don't work for me, because it's like the meet cute, you know, and then they have their own problems. So that's where I was like, this is going to try to convince me that these two people are in love. And if they're not in like super love, like if I'm not 100% convinced, I at least know that they have like this by the end of the movie that I'm like, they obviously care for each other
mm-hmm.
to the point that it could be at some point. So like it did a good job of convincing me at the beginning I was like, challenge accepted, give it a try. So it actually did what it was supposed to do, I think.
Okay. Okay, and one of the things that I had mentioned to you, or I had sent you a text about or something like that, was that I had a ton of notes within like the first 15 minutes or so.
Okay.
And so I'm gonna try to blitz through these pretty quick, without, you know, getting too much into them here. So one of the things that I really like, I really, really enjoy this film. Like it's one that I could just have on just to listen to the dialogue, you know, mm-hmm. I could have it on whenever. Just because, you know, I guess first I should say is if you're not a fan at all of Ethan Hawke or Julie Delpy, you probably won't like this film, although it is much different from any Ethan Hawke movie you've seen him in. Like, it's not the Ethan Hawke from, like, Training Day or something, or like...
Great Expectations.
Or like Reality Bites, you know, with Winona Ryder or whatever. So it's not like that kind of like, oh, I'm a slacker, you know, and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just like two. And what's interesting is we'll get into this with the second film, with the sequel to this. But it's two people in their 20s that think that they know a lot and know a lot about some things, but are kind of full of shit about some other things.
Right. Well, that's how everybody is.
Right. And that's what I like about it. Okay. So getting into it, I really like the kind of small interest that they show in each other. Like, I think that it's staged really well at the beginning because mm-hmm. they're on this train and it's kind of like that, oh, there's someone that's sort of my own age and maybe I should talk to them, but I don't want to be weird about it. And so it's, you know, he's trying to like figure out how to approach her and.
Yeah. They're like listening to that couple, like fight, like.
Yeah. Yell at her. Yeah. They're listening to the French. They're listening to the French people. And so what I think is so interesting watching at this time more analytically, I guess, or more for this discussion is the camera is doing the same thing as what Jesse's doing. Jesse's Ethan Hawke's character, to where it's kind of distant and it shows both of them full bodied. And then when he finally decides to speak to her, when he finally, you know, says, fuck it, I'm going to just start talking to her. The camera pushes in on him. Like at about a medium shot.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of that conversation between him and her, it's all a medium shot to where it's much closer on them.
Right.
And I kind of like that because it's like, oh, here's the setting. Here's, you know, all this sort of stuff. And then it pushes in right when he's finally deciding to kind of make his move, so to speak. But, they, you know, they begin to talk and they're both very smart and they go to this different car and I like that. They're having all the kind of nervous mannerisms people have when they first meet each other.
Right.
Like he's kind of trying to impress her and they're like playing with the salt shaker and they're not really making like direct eye contact all the time. Like they're saying something and kind of looking away because it's kind of like that vulnerable, ooh, I hope this person likes me kind of a situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, she kind of laughs a little harder than normal at his jokes and so it's just little stuff like that. And that continues out throughout the film where, you know, like he'll do something to where she looks down and he'll kind of want to like move the hair behind her ear. But
yeah.
He doesn't, you know, they don't have that comfortability yet. You know, they're not that close yet. And so he wants to do that. But then he like pulls his hand away because he doesn't know how she's going to take it.
Yeah.
And so I really like that. One of the things that I think is kind of a funny little a little tick that I thought of was, you know, they're going to eat and the menu gets put on there and she says thank you and he says thanks. And I think that that's such a slight little statement as to not only the difference between like men and women, because I feel like stereotypically guys are a lot more casual with their greetings and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it's also the difference kind of between European and U.S. cultures, to where U.S. is, you know, the stupid, ugly Americans, like we were saying with the whole American Potter business from the Harry Potter discussion last time. And
like she speaks like two languages or almost three, and mm-hmm. he speaks American.
Yeah,
you know?
he speaks American. Yeah, because they go later and they're talking to those Germans and they're like, oh, do you speak English? And they're like, yeah, of course. Do you happen to speak German for a change? And oh, no, of course you don't. You're an American.
Right.
And it's stuff like that to where I'm like, God, fucking Americans are such assholes.
They're
such assholes. Yeah, so I really like all their kind of their like pauses in the conversation. Like it's, you know, I've talked a lot about in other shows about how some actors, when they don't work, and specifically for a Podshots episode that I have coming up here at the end of this month, when an actor doesn't work for me is when they are clearly just reading the line.
Right.
And they don't like take a moment to pause and listen and, you know, to actually feel like they're in that conversation. And I think these two do a great job of that because they're, you know, not everyone can sort of be this deep and vulnerable and witty person all at the same time, all the time. And I think these two, you know, they have pauses in the conversation and they have moments where they're just kind of staring out the window and they don't really know what to say to each other. And I kind of like that. Like, I like that. I feel like that, you know, this one is kind of a longer movie. I think it's like an hour 40 or so, for it being just a movie where it's just conversations. It's not, you know, there's not anything that really happens, but
right.
I'm glad that they do take those little moments to pause and all that kind of thing.
Right, because it does. I mean, like, I hate to keep comparing it to romantic comedies, but that's like what you have to do, and or what I had to do, I guess. And it is so much more realistic than,
yeah,
you know, anything in about the whole saying the lines. You know, like with romantic comedies, you get a funny line and then like a serious one liner or whatever. And this is just like so much more than that. Mm-hmm. So it is a lot more, you know, I don't know, realistic and intense, I guess.
Yeah, it's real. It feels real. It feels like, you know, what ideally, if I had a conversation, I would ideally speak like this.
Yeah.
You know? Like I would, you know, not necessarily what he's saying, but just the way that he's saying things. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I think is interesting that I wanted to run by you here, and it is a mistake in the film, and I don't know that if it's intentional or not, but he's telling the story, and they're still in the train car, and he's telling the story of his great-grandmother dying, and he uses his finger to make that rainbow, and then he sees her again.
Yeah.
And when he's telling the story, he says grandmother, his grandmother died, instead of great-grandmother. So he says great-grandmother once, and then he says grandmother, and then he says great-grandmother again.
Mm.
And so what I think is interesting is either that's a mistake by Jesse, the character, which I like because it kind of adds reality to the scene, you know, where he's not maybe as perfect with the things that the story that he's telling.
Right.
Or I feel like, you know, he could be, I don't think that he is, but he could be just sort of making it up as he goes to try to impress her. And he has that one little flaw of not saying great grandmother. And so either way, it doesn't really matter. Like it doesn't change the way that I feel about the character. Or it could, you know, obviously be just a mistake from Ethan Hawke. But I don't know. I kind of like thinking about that because I feel like everything else is so perfect in the film in terms of the dialogue to where this is – it's not glaring, but it is a little different. Like it is something that's not quite right. So,
yeah.
okay, so then they, you know, they get off the train and all that kind of thing and they get to walking around. And I do like that it takes them about 15 minutes into the film before they introduce each other's names. Like, cause you know, it's just this guy and this girl talking and there's no real reason to, you know, it's kind of like when you're in the airport and you're talking to someone.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of like your airport person that you know, right. But.
You know, they, you know, had they not gotten off the train, they might have never known.
Yeah. 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 And so they get off the train and they start checking out Vienna, which is fucking awesome. Like I watched this movie and I'm like, God, why have I not got out of the U.S. before? Like, Jesus Christ.
Right.
But, so some of the things they start talking about is I love that they are not afraid and more importantly not afraid to ask and more importantly not afraid to answer really kind of awkward questions, because they're like right into talking about like sex and love and religion and what and souls and like all this stuff that you wouldn't normally talk to some stranger about.
Why do you think that is? Because they think they're never going to see each other again?
Yeah, I think that it's because they're like, oh, fuck it. You know, I'm not going to meet. I don't know this person. They don't know me. And again, it could be that thing to where they're trying to put on like their best self, like their idealized version of themselves.
Yeah.
To where, you know, I'm sure that is what they believe, but, you know, they're just kind of trying to present themselves in like the most ideal way. And I do like, I really do enjoy the soul discussion that's really brief, to where he talks about how, you know, thousands of years ago, there was X amount of people on the planet, and each person has their own little individual soul, and now there are billions of people. You know, if each person has their own soul, where did all those extra souls come from? You know, and if not, then are we pieces of those original souls and all that kind of stuff? Like, I think that that's really interesting, and whether the movie doesn't answer the question and isn't concerned in asking the in answering the question. But I think that it's that sort of conversation that they talk about that really draws me to the film, because they're actually like talking about something. They're not talking about, oh, I got to get a new dress and oh, my generic job sucks, you know, and that kind of stuff. Like they're actually speaking about something.
Right.
Which I think is interesting. Right. So let me take a drink. And okay, so the next sequence that I really, really enjoy, and I am winding down. I'm getting through it a little quicker here, Cruz. So, it's when they're in the music store. They go in the music store, and they have the music booth sequence, and they're in there, and Kath Bloom is singing the song "Come Here," or that's the record that they're playing, and it's kind of like the, you know, that's when they're falling in love sort of a thing, is where they're in this little booth and, you know, they're listening to the music, so they can't really talk. And so they're not going to be like staring at each other, but they're looking at each other. It's kind of like that, you know, I'm looking at her and then I turn away when she looks at me and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And there really was like before it was just like flirting. There was like some eye contact, but they were still doing the awkward thing. But then when they don't have a choice but to look at each other, there's like that one look that they exchange where you're like, all right, so that's how it's going to be, kind of a thing, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that. Okay. So the next scene that I wanted to talk about is when they kind of have their first kiss, like they're, you know, it's when the film is the most cheesy. They go up and there's the sun setting and all this kind of stuff. And it's like they're opening up and they're being vulnerable and all this kind of thing. But what I really like about it is they kiss and it's fine. But then right after that, they hug each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think that the hug is more important than the actual kiss, because like, the kiss is like whatever, but when they're hugging, that's like more of a vulnerability kind of a thing, because they're all of a sudden not afraid to be right next to each other.
Right.
You know, they're like sort of broken through that little bubble kind of a thing. And so, yeah, so I like that scene. And then I like it even more because right after that scene, shortly after, she kind of makes fun of the scene. Like she talks about how it's kind of cheesy and about how he was putting the moves on her and all that kind of stuff. Like, I like that she is going along with it at the time, but then she kind of is like, yeah, you know, I knew what you were doing. Like, I'm not stupid. Like, I, you know, I knew that you're fucking trying to put the moves on me, guy.
Right.
Like, I like part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, and that's again, like a part of like two people actually, like, assessing the situation after it happens, as opposed to, like, just having a, I don't know, something else in there. But, yeah, I liked that part, too.
Yeah, so then, I mean, getting towards the end of the film here, they, you know, I like that they, I really like that they have the relationship discussion about strategy, where they're playing pinball.
Yes.
And, you know, she talks about how she's, you know, sick of every time she hears something about her boyfriend or potential boyfriend that she thinks or stores that as, like, potential ammo to hurt him later and that kind of thing. Like, she, I think she says something about how it's like we're all, like, positioning – we're all generals and they're, like, positioning their armies for the eventual, like, breakup or fight or battle or that kind of thing.
Right.
Like, and I like that a lot because, you know, you think about, like, different relationships you've had and different stuff like that and about, like, ooh, I shouldn't have said that because then once that got thrown in my face, that sure did suck, you know, and that kind of thing. And I just think it all boils down to how good the dialogue is and how real it feels and all that kind of thing. And I like that it gets on until almost towards the end of the film when he finally asks her if she has a boyfriend.
Yes.
You know, because he, it's so funny because it's like, he waits so long because he doesn't really want to hear the answer. Like,
right.
He, you know, he would be devastated if she said, oh yeah, I have a boyfriend. That, I shouldn't have kissed
him. I mean, like,
you.
I don't think he would because, like, I think as of right now, they're still operating under the pretense that, like, they're not gonna never see each other again. So, like, I don't know if her having a boyfriend would really be that huge of a deal.
Yeah.
So maybe he just didn't give a shit until he's like, hey, do you have a boyfriend too, by the way? Like, it don't really matter, but.
Yeah, and then he doesn't really want to talk about his girlfriend situation at all.
Right.
You know, and
I guess it doesn't matter. I guess that's just what my thinking was. Like, who gives a shit? You're in Vienna.
Area code rules, right? So, yeah, and then one of the other things that I liked is they talk about, you know, the breaking up to where. How little you're thinking of those you break up with is how little those that you broke up with you are thinking of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, like that's fucking brutal. Cause then again, you know, I think about, oh yeah, well, I remember breaking up with this girl. And then I think about people that broke up with me and I'm like, holy shit. Like that's awful. Like that's awful to think about.
Yeah.
Whatever. And then one of the things that's in the trailer that I really like is the phone call scene, you know, where they're,
my favorite scenes in the movie for sure.
Where they're doing the little cutesy phone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I do like that. It's, you know, again, it goes back to how open these characters are to where they're not afraid to just, you know, they're under the idea that they're never going to see each other. So they just say, fuck it. You know, I think this guy's cute and he looks like this and I
yeah.
like that. And,
yeah. And, that part.
Yeah, so that's really good. You know, the end when she's wanting, you know, when she's leaving and she's getting on her train and they finally, you know, because this whole time it's like, oh, yeah, yeah, we're not going to see each other. We're not going to meet up. That's dumb. You know, let's not exchange phone numbers. And then at the end, they kind of had that oh, shit, like, you know, this is ending. Like, we need to, you know, I don't want to lose what we have. And so we need to at least have a way to get a hold of each other, but they don't want to exchange phone numbers, so they agreed to 6 months later that they're going to meet.
Right.
And so, you know, when the film ends, for me, I really want them to be together. Like, in my mind, he goes back and they get together, is the way that I sort of look at it.
I didn't.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's it. That'll be interesting when we talk about the sequel. And then what I really like is that the end scenes of the film is where they show the same spots that they were in, but they show them in the morning light instead of in the sort of romantically lit evening.
Yes.
And so it just shows like how flat everything looks and how, you know, that kind of night of romance or whatever is just like any other day. So I don't know. This is one where, like, I literally could go on and on and on about this film, which I've clearly been doing for, like, the last 10 minutes. But so it's one where it's tough because, you know, I wanted, you know, for me, it's like, oh, yeah, and this scene's great, and this scene's great, and this scene's great. And it's more of just like picking out all of the scenes that I really like as opposed to actually like analyzing why I like them.
Right.
But I just think that it's so well written and it's just so well delivered. And it's a film I don't feel like a lot of people have seen. And it's, you know, it's not a, you know, it's not something that you're going to walk away from going, holy shit, I can't believe they did this. And, you know, oh, this fucking
CGI. That explosion was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. That camera work that they did and the CGI is fucking like Inception. You know, it's not that kind of a movie, but it's one that I think is really cute and really well executed. And I really like it.
Yeah. So. Well, like I said, I knew it was a romantic movie. And so when I first saw them on the train, I'm like, oh God, they're going to shove these two together and try to make me think that they love each other. But I mean, it actually, you know, if I didn't think they like 100% loved each other, I really did come out of it with the feeling that, you know, it really did make a difference that one night. So.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's probably good for Before Sunrise. So let's move on to our third movie, which is 1990, also in 1995, and it is Sense and Sensibility.
This year, only one motion picture will bring you all the surprises that life and love can offer.
Yeah, it's full of spices.
Marianne and Eleanor, as different as two sisters can be.
Do you love him? I do not attempt to deny that I think very highly of him, that I greatly esteem him.
Esteem him? Like him?
Eleanor's not like you or me, dear. She does not like to be swayed by her emotions.
Columbia Pictures invites you.
The more I know of the world, the more I am convinced that I shall never see a man whom I can truly love.
To find romance.
Marianne, you must change. You will catch a cold.
What care I for colds when there is such a man?
You will care very much when your nose swells up.
You are right. Help me, Eleanor.
To feel passionately.
Why did you not urge him to stay?
He must have had his reasons for going.
I know the cruelty of dividing two young people long attached to one another.
Eleanor, where is your heart?
To laugh unexpectedly.
Oh, if only this rain would stop.
Only you would stop.
And to risk everything for someone you love.
Your sister seems very happy.
We know so little of him.
Willoughby!
From Jane Austen's timeless classic, get ready to lose your heart and come to your senses. Academy Award winner Emma Thompson, Alan Rickman, Kate Winslet, and Hugh Grant. Sense and Sensibility.
Another shit review. After the death of the patriarch, the Dashwood family takes a step down in society and faces hardship as they are four women virtually penniless. Eleanor and Marianne, two sisters with different perspectives on life and interests, keep one another in line and support one another through death, hardship, and a love and friendship. Written by Zippy Zipper.
Yeah, that's why I kept that in there, because it was written by Zippy Zipper. For fuck's sake.
For fuck's sake.
Yeah, so... Sense and Sensibility, this is your second selection, Cruz. What do you think about this one? Like, why'd you pick this one?
Well, you know how I'm, like, not a romantic movie person?
Yes.
This one is one I could watch over and over.
Really? Okay, interesting.
I don't know why. It's got to be Emma Thompson. It has to be what it is.
And you know, of course, that this was written by Emma Thompson.
Right, the screenplay.
Right.
Obviously not the...
No. That was her pseudonym. She's really old. She's also Jane Austen.
Oh, well, that's nuts. I've always been a fan of Jane Austen novels. Because she... I'm not going to get too much into it, but when she writes about her... Because she always writes about her class, or always did. She parodied it so much that it was almost, you know, like humorous when... You know, she always writes about what did they say? A novel of manners.
A novel of
like
manners,
that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, because that's how they were. And so whenever it's stuff like that, like, obviously in this movie, there's a miscommunication in here, and it all has to do with manners and how to say Miss and Mr. and Mrs. And so, like, it just, I've always liked reading stuff like this. So when I watched this, I don't remember. I think I just, like, straight up bought it. I was like, oh, Sense and Sensibility, why not? I had it on VHS.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I've always loved Emma Thompson, and she just totally, I'm pretty sure that's why she just, like, made the film for me.
Yeah. This is one, which is interesting that this is one that I'll be speaking on that Ang Lee discussion, because this is directed by Ang Lee. Yeah, this is interesting. I feel so comfortable in books like this and films like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like this sort of proper British society sort of film. Right. You know, and I just...
that's how we live now, so...
Pretty close.
Right.
I don't know that it's just if it's because of, you know, being so comfortable with the written material to where I've had to read so much of that stuff.
Right.
In college, like, or
has a lot to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah, to where it's just like, you know, it's easy getting into, oh, they speak like this and I need to read it like this, and of course something's gonna happen to where, you know, if all they had was fucking cell phones, everything would have been fixed. You know, and there's gonna be your terrible, horrible sort of one note characters, and especially women, and in this one it's definitely sort of brought to life by the character of Fanny.
Isn't she the fucking worst?
Oh, I put, oh, this fucking bitch, Fanny.
Well, like, at the beginning, I wrote that they're talking about how much money to give these daughters and the mom who just lost their father.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks him down from, like 3,000 pounds to, like, 1,500 to, like, a hundred, you know, like, while they're going out and shopping and running errands and buying stuff. And I'm like, God, this lady is horrifying.
Yeah, that's one of the things I don't think people give this film and you know, films that are by that are adapted from Jane Austen books enough credit, is that it's funny. Like, they're funny.
Yeah, they are.
You just have to know where the humor is and realize.
Like you have to... It's a different kind of funny. It's obviously not Anchorman funny.
Yeah, it's not fucking Mall Cop. For Christ's sake.
Well, that's not funny.
Yeah, it's not that attempt anyway. But so my next note besides the fucking bitch Fanny thing was I could watch Emma Thompson, Hugh Grant, and Alan Rickman all day long.
I know!
God. Like, and they don't even have to be doing anything interesting. Like, they could just be, you know, I think Hugh Grant for me is the least of the three, but Emma Thompson and Alan Rickman for sure. Like, I could watch them do nothing, just...
When he walked in as Colonel Brandon, were you like, fuck yeah?
I put, holy shit. I put, Brandon looks great. Alan Rickman is the motherfucking man.
Yes.
Yeah, it's just, you know, he's so good. And he doesn't get a lot of, I think it's interesting to see him in this film because he's kind of reined in Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
Like, there's not a lot of Snape Alan Rickman.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, he
doesn't, like, do any Patronuses or anything.
Yeah. Even though I'm drinking, you know, his Patronus today.
Right.
He doesn't have a lot of great speeches to where he's using his voice and speaking very slowly and all of that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like he does, but it's just having him on screen is, again, just like another safe feeling for me.
Right. It's so amazing.
Yeah, he's good. But, I did have in here, this is kind of like the novel or the film version of novels of manners that Jane Austen would produce. And it's kind of, you know, the art of behaving oneself. And there's always one in the family that refuses to live by the manner that they're supposed to. And
which is obviously Marianne.
Yeah, it's Marianne and played by, what's her face?
Kate Winslet. What did you think of her?
You know, Kate Winslet, she had the worst hair ever.
What happened? The front of the cover, I'm like, it looks like a weird afro thing.
Yeah, she literally looks like a man in the front of this DVD.
Yeah, she does.
And, you know, I was asking Ashley if she wanted to watch it, and she goes, what is this? And I said, oh, it's blah, 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 and told her a little bit about it, and she's like, no, it just looks horrible. she's like, this DVD box just looks awful. And it's not good because it's not really that flattering of anyone on there. I mean, Hugh Grant looks okay, but the rest of them,
same though.
Yeah.
So Fanny's kind of a bitch, and then Hugh Grant's character is surprisingly wonderful.
Yeah.
Which, like, he shows up and she's like, my brother's gonna show up, and everyone's like, oh, fuck, who's this guy gonna be? But like, instantly he figures out that, you know, the whole room situation.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone thought that was nice. And I wrote in here, I knew I didn't like Fanny when she was showing him the library and she said, I've never liked the smell of books.
Oh, I know. I was like, fuck you.
Like, I go to Barnes & Noble sometime and just stand there and sniff. So
yeah.
That's a pretty big deal breaker for me.
You know what's good times is I'm in my room with all of my boxes of fucking comics, and those smell like book like crazy.
Yeah, buddy.
They smell like book and plastic a lot, which is kind of a bummer, but
right.
a lot of book smelling going on in this room.
So basically what I wrote about Emma Thompson is she rarely lets herself be shown in any other light than like upright and steadfast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously that's kind of the point. She's the sensibility and Marianne is psychotic and I don't know what happened in this scene, but I wrote, everyone is fucking losing it, and she just gets to sit there and drink her tea like a boss. Like, I don't know what was even going on, but she, like, was having it. Like,
that's funny.
Yeah.
That's good. I like watching films like this after, you know, we mentioned this in the Harry Potter discussion, but I like how we can see different Harry Potter people in this film.
Umbridge
is in it. You get fucking House is in it.
Yes. Isn't he funny in this movie?
He is really good because, you know, a lot of this is like the women kind of push the men around in this
mm-hmm.
film.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one where he's like, you'll do no such thing. You know,
yeah,
and he's just like, fuck you, smart. Umbridge.
I feel like they like watch this and then they're like, we should make a show just about this guy. Maybe he could be a doctor or something. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he could be a real dickhead. That'd be cool.
Right.
yeah, I love that, you know, we get sort of into the misunderstandings and we get Hugh Grant's, his fiance.
Oh, isn't she just,
oh.
I mean, she's not like mean or anything, but she's annoying as hell.
Yeah, she's a puke.
How sad were you when she said that she was engaged to him? I was like, no.
Well, it's where she says, he looks to you as his sister.
Yeah.
Like she's describing Hugh Grant's character. And I'm like, oh, like I literally felt my shoulders like slump. And I was like, oh no. Yeah. And then Hugh Grant is basically out of the movie for a good hour and a half.
But he's like still in the movie.
Yeah.
He's like Mr. What is he? GF, Mr. F. You know?
Oh yeah. The mysterious Mr. F.
Those cousins are hilarious.
Yes.
No,
they're ridiculous. Funny. They're funny. They're the people I'd like to see in a movie and not have in my fucking family.
Right.
Because I would lose it.
But truthful, and they like talk about what everybody else doesn't want to talk about.
Yeah. And they're just like the gossip that I fear I could be all of the time. Because that's all they have to do.
Right.
Because
all of her daughters are married. So like all she wants to do is marry everybody else off.
Right. And okay. So explain to me how much of a motherfucker Willoughby is.
Oh, isn't he a dickwad?
Oh, absolutely.
Especially in this day and age, like when you basically show interest in somebody and everyone just assumes that you're getting married.
Right.
You know, it's not like now where you can take a girl out for, I mean, like it's totally obviously completely different, but like, at that point in time, like, they're in the carriage by themselves, you know, and everyone's, like, you know, talking about that. And so, like, people just assume. And then he just fucking leaves.
Well,
straight up.
Yeah, especially because, you know, Colonel Brandon, Alan Rickman's character, he's all up in Kate Winslet's business.
I know, right?
And, you know,
props for not gold digging.
Yeah, they do that. They do that where he comes calling on her, which is such a fucking old way to... Like, how embarrassing is that? Because he goes in and calls on her, and Willoughby is about to show up, and so she basically is just like, oh, you can fuck off, Alan Rickman.
Yeah, and he's really forgiving at the end there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd be like, bitch, you take your fucking pneumonia, and you just go lay in the bed.
Oh, yeah, I have that written down. I put Snape comes through in the fucking clutch.
Yeah. Why does he always love chicks that don't like him?
Yeah, I don't know. That's just his, well, not in Love Actually.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. He's being pursued in that one, but.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, one of the things that I was kind of irritated with is Marianne is the character where you have to kind of really, it's a really fine line between her being dramatic and her being fucking annoying.
Yes.
And I put fucking Marianne in all of her goddamn drama. Just be normal for a little bit.
She's at that party. She's like, "Woo!" And she like screams it.
Yeah, just like, "Willoughby!"
Because she's like, she's a total id. Like, she has no consequences. She doesn't give a shit about what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, she just like wants to be happy. She's either like ridiculously happy or horribly sad. And it's so true. Like, when she's talking to Emma Thompson and she's like, do you like him? And, you know, Emma Thompson's like, I esteem him. And she's like, esteem him, bitch. You know,
yeah.
But like, it's just not how she is. So.
Yeah, because, you know, Eleanor is just prim and proper and wants to be like the good housewife and all that kind of stuff. And Marianne is just fucking horny as can be.
She is nuts. Yeah.
And, yeah, so she's, so I don't know. So it's interesting. It's, one of the things that I mentioned earlier and then wanted to mention again here is, you know, I enjoy the story well enough. Like, I enjoyed the movie. I enjoy the story. I just find that sometimes in movies like this, it's hard for me to identify with the characters.
Right.
Because, you know, the society is so different. And it's frustrating for me to watch in this era or this particular way of storytelling because it's following characters that can't do anything or refuse to do anything. Like that they won't just act. They're suffocated by these manners, and it's so frustrating to watch in today's society.
The whole Hugh Grant thing when he's like in the stables and he's trying to like explain to her when he was at school, you know, and then his fucking bitch sister is like, "Mom needs you right now."
Right.
You know? What the hell? Just give him like 5 minutes.
Yeah. He's. And okay, so I want to move on to the section where. Where Hugh Grant comes back.
At the very end or before that?
At the very end.
Okay.
And he comes back and they, well, earlier, a couple of scenes earlier, they had had the reveal to where Mr. Ferris was married.
Right.
And isn't it Lucy? Is that what her name is?
Yes.
And Eleanor is just fucking crushed.
I know. And she's so cool about it though. She's like, that's fine.
You know, and it's too bad, too, because, you know, they're all trying to marry, they're trying to marry off Marianne, is that her name? Right, Marianne.
Yeah.
And, you know, Eleanor, who is maybe, what, like 5-10 years older at the most?
Right, spinster.
Yeah, she's just, like, doomed to be alone.
They even mention that sometime. Like, oh, poor Marianne, she's going to be a spinster like her sister. It's like, she's supposed to be, like, in the book, she's, like, 22 years old.
Yeah. And so I just think that that's really interesting, you know, to where in that day, if you weren't hitched by then, you were nobody.
Right.
But so anyway, so she thinks that Hugh Grant's character is married and he comes to visit her and then.
They ask about his mom.
Yeah, they ask about, oh, they ask how Ferris. Mrs. Ferris is.
And he's like, my mother's fine.
And they say, no, your wife. And he says that he's not married.
And he says, oh, then you're not hurt. Because this is my obviously my favorite part of the whole movie.
Yeah. Because
he's like, oh, you're not hurt. And he's like, she decided to marry my brother. And then Emma Thompson's like, so you're not married. And he's like, no. And then she just fucking loses it.
Yeah, and I fucking lost it with her.
It's like the best thing ever.
Oh, my God. You know, I see that. And as soon as it happened, I was like, oh, yeah. And then she kept losing it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, fuck, it is really sad. Like, oh, man. To where I was okay. And then she kept crying, and I was like, oh, now this is hitting me. Now this is affecting me.
Yeah, it's a buildup. Like, she's been trying to be fucking cool about this for so long, and she finally figures out, you know, like, shit's gonna happen.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the, like, you know, sensibility or whatever is just out the fucking window.
Right, she's like, yeah. She was so proper for so long, and then all of a sudden, she just can't handle it anymore.
It's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I mean, it's a great scene. You know, it's performed very well, and you know, because isn't Emma Thompson someone that you just want to, like, hang out with and hug and just friends with?
Yeah, like, best friend.
I mean,
I want
Jesus.
To be able to, but yeah. She's my best friend.
She's just, like, someone that would give you all, like, all of the good advice.
Yes! You know? Like, we'd have tea and just hang out and So, yeah, she finally smiles this huge smile at the end. And then, of course, there's always a wedding at the end of these stupid books. But, you know, I mean, that wasn't even the point at that point. But House was there at the wedding, so that was cool.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it basically ended once he said he wasn't.
Exactly, right. Yeah, but, so oh, my God. Yeah, that's like, the whole point of the movie, I think, is like, the last, like, 5 minutes of that scene.
Right.
So.
All right, well, do you have any other notes that we didn't hit for that one, Cruiser?
Fanny's a dumb bitch, blah blah blah. I like the little sister. She was pretty good in that too.
Oh yeah, where they're doing the whole
Atlas stuff.
The whole Atlas stuff is fun. Yeah.
He says I can go with on our journey only under the knowledge I'll be very badly treated, like stuff like that.
Yeah, but, about the swabbing and all that.
Hey, that was pretty good. Administering rum and stuff. So she was pretty cute.
Yeah, that was good. I like that. I thought that was well done too.
So that's all I got.
Okay, well, let's move into our last film, and it is 2004's Before Sunset.
So listen, here's the deal. This is what we should do. You should get off the train with me here in Vienna and come check out the town.
What?
Come on, it'll be fun. All right. They think of it like this. Jump ahead 10, 20 years, and you're married. Only your marriage doesn't have that same energy that it used to have. You start to think about all those guys you've met in your life and what might have happened if you picked up with one of them.
Let me get my bag.
9 years ago, two strangers met by chance and spent a night in Vienna that ended before sunrise. They are about to meet for the first time since.
Hi.
Hello.
I can't believe you're here.
Well, I live here in Paris.
I wanted to talk to you for so long, you know, that now...
Me too. How long do we have? 20 minutes and 30 seconds? No,
we got more than that.
Now they have one afternoon to find out if they belong together.
I remember that night better than I do entire years.
Do I look any different? I do.
I'd have to see you naked.
What?
Let's get on that boat. Come on, it'll be fun.
You don't have time.
Oh, God, why don't we exchange phone numbers and stuff? Why don't we do that?
Past is the past. It was meant to be that way.
What? You really believe that? I have these dreams. I'm in the car, and a buddy of mine is driving me downtown, and I'm staring out the window, and I think I see you.
What does it mean, the right man? The love of your life? The concept is absurd. The idea that we can only be complete with another person is evil, right?
I'm just happy to see you, even if you've become an angry, manic, depressive activist. I still like you. I still enjoy being around you. Like if somebody were to touch me, I would dissolve into molecules.
I want to see if you stay together or if you dissolve into molecules.
How am I doing?
What if you had a second chance with the one that got away?
Jessie, a writer from the U.S., and Celine, a French woman working for an environment protection organization, acquainted 9 years ago on the train from Budapest to Vienna, meet again when Jessie arrives in Paris for a reading of his new book. As they have only a few hours until his plane leaves, they stroll through Paris talking about their experiences, views, and whether they still love each other. Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum. Okay, so this is one of the sequels where you're like, what? They're making a sequel to that? Like, holy shit. Okay. And then, you know, since this, they've made another sequel, which will come out sometime this year. It premiered at Sundance in January. But I have yet to see it. It's easily probably one of the most anticipated movies for me for the year.
Oh, yeah.
And it's also one of those where they say, you know, it's like the thing that you think is a terrible idea, and then you actually watch it, and you're like, oh, holy shit, they did actually pull that off.
I don't think that was a terrible idea.
Well, just to make a sequel, because the first, Before Sunset is so, or Before Sunrise, excuse me, is so sort of revered by critics.
Okay.
That when they announced a sequel, they're like, oh, really? Like, you probably won't be able to capture the same thing that you had in that first one. and especially 9 years later, you know. So this was a film that I had seen before Sunrise, before this came out. And when this came out, I got it on DVD or I watched it on DVD. And I was, you know, really very curious to see what was going to happen because, you know, it wasn't quite 9 years for me since I first saw the first film and this film, but it had been a while. So it's kind of like the people that you know, and then you sort of forget about them for a little bit, and then you're reintroduced to them. And so I obviously really liked it because I brought it on here to talk about, but watching these for the first time really close together, what did you think about this one, Cruiser?
Yeah, I mean, it was like at least 10 minutes. I took a bathroom break and I got some more, like another beer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put that other movie in. So I had forgotten about him for at least 10 minutes.
Sure. You'd grown. And
right. You know, we did our pondering apart.
Yeah. You care about different things now.
Right. I'm a different person. When I saw it before, that bathroom trip was really nuts. I like this one better than the first one.
Oh, good. Okay. Me too. And for different reasons. Like, I think that, you know, you obviously have to have seen the first one.
Right. Otherwise, you'd be like,
otherwise,
you could watch this one by itself, I guess, but you wouldn't have the background, obviously.
Yeah, the context isn't there. And I'm a person that loves all the details, you know, and so I'd be like, what the fuck is this about? So the beginning, you know, they meet, and I really like the fact that the book he wrote conceivably could be the first movie.
I know, I had just gotten done watching The Words.
Okay.
So it's like, oh shit. You know what I mean? It's like the same thing.
I don't know. No, I don't know that.
You didn't watch The Words?
Uh-uh.
All right, talk to you later. Never mind.
So I like that, you know, that his book could have been, you know, it could have just been a thing to where, you know, Celine accuses him of kind of romanticizing the night. And I kind of like that that's sort of what happened because everything was so well rehearsed and everyone was so well spoken and everything did work really neatly and nicely and all that. You know, to where it could have been a script in a book or,
right.
You know,
technically it was.
Yeah. I also like that their meeting like sort of actually makes sense, you know, because you have all of these meet cutes and these romantic comedies. But here, you know, he's on a book tour and she sees it a month before and makes a point to be there. And there's nothing cute really about it. She just shows up.
Right.
You know, and then I like that. They have that realness of how sort of awkward it is for a little bit.
Right. They're like walking forever. And she's like talking and telling him to turn. I thought she was going to maybe take him in the alley and kill him.
You know, because they're like, hi, like, it's good to see you. You know, it's one of those where they have so much that they want to say, but they don't know how to start.
Right. Well, she just like pretty much dives right into it. She's like, I got to know, did you show up?
Yes. Now, what did you think of that?
I mean, like I said, when I watched that first one, I'm like, there's no way they're going to get back together.
Yeah. And I guess for those that don't know, I mean, this is a spoiler show. So this is a 9-year-old movie, but, you know, they agreed to get together and she didn't show up because her grandmother that she references in the first film had died. And so she couldn't make it. Otherwise she says she would have been there. And she asked Jesse if he showed up and he says no. And they're both like, oh, okay, good. And then she's like, wait a minute, why the fuck didn't you show up? Like, I would have been there. I would have been there.
And then he confesses that he, like, waited around and, like,
put posters up and his number. Yeah. And he was there. And what I like is instead of it going like, oh, that's really too bad, and, like, hug, to where she laughs. And it's like, oh, that's awful. Like, I'm sorry, but it's kind of funny, you know? So I like that. Like, I like that it doesn't get too sentimental at that point.
Right.
You know?
Because, you know, like, if they would have come back, there wouldn't have really been a sequel, so.
Yeah. I do like that, you know, it does go from that sort of they're kind of awkward in the beginning and all that, and then it falls right back into the first movie.
Yeah, they get to the cafe, and the cigarettes come out, and he bums one from her, and then all of a sudden they're like, boom.
Yeah, let's talk about all kinds of shit. How's your marriage doing? Like, how's this?
How's your kid?
Yeah.
Well, right away, he walks out of the bookstore with her, and he flashes that fucking ring, and I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah, you know, I didn't notice that until the cafe the first time I watched it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I saw him and I was like...
Son, and I was like, oops.
Yeah, because I saw that and I was like, oh, like, ooh, that's going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, again, that, you know, now that they're in their 30s, I like that they're sort of talking about more mature things. You know, and since I'm in my 30s, it's not like that's something that I talk about. Like, they're talking about gun shit and, like, a bunch of politics. Yeah, and
I was super bored.
And they're talking about that kind of thing, and so I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. I do like that. You know, they talk about how they were both in the U.S. and both in New York, and they just kind of missed each other. And you know, that sort of thing seems to happen a lot in real life, to where you're like, oh, no shit, you were there, you know, 5 months ago or whatever. I was there. I didn't see you, you know, and that kind of thing. I do think that it's a funny sequence where she's talking about having the cop tell her about having a gun.
Yeah.
To where he's like, one of these days it's going to be either you or it's going to be them. And, you know, talking about having a gun and about how she's kind of neurotic and wanted to get a gun right after that. And I just, I think that's nice.
That scene was kind of scary. When she started talking about her job, I kind of zoned out a little bit. So I was like, okay.
Yeah, that's the point of the film where it gets very liberal. Like, they start talking about, you know, it's basically like Greenpeace type stuff and
right,
save the environment. And you know, it's, I think that's a fine line again, like we've been saying about these films, is where it can come off a little preachy. And so they kind of get to right to that line and then they kind of pull back.
Well, no, and I didn't think it was preachy at all. I was just like, well, I don't really care that your job involves recycling. Like, that's fine with you, but.
Right. Okay. And so a couple of the notes or a couple of the lines that I have written down here is one that I sort of identify with Ethan Hawke's character, where he says he likes getting older because it makes you appreciate moments. And I think that's really true. Like, I remember, you know, being in my early 20s or my late teens or whatever, and having that, oh, this sort of thing will happen all the time. Like, you know, they talk about that a lot in sporting events, to where when you're a young person in either the Super Bowl or World Series or whatever, to where you don't appreciate it because you just feel like there's going to be many opportunities in there.
Okay.
And so I feel like that's kind of the same thing, you know, in life for this Jesse character, where now he's getting older, he kind of appreciates what he used to have, and he appreciates the moments that he has that are successful now.
I gotcha.
And so I like that. And I like that. I think that he basically summed up my entire personality with this line, where he said, I feel like I'm designed to be slightly dissatisfied with everything. And I said, hold, and I put Eric fucking Williams next to it. And so, I mean, because that's pretty much true. I mean, it's one of those where I have so little to complain about, to where I feel like I create things to be upset about, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Or it's like, well, I don't know what Cruz and I are going to talk about for the next show in June, so I better make sure and get on her and make sure she makes a decision for that. You know, stuff like that.
Better nag her until she doesn't punch me.
Yeah. It's like, well, I better make sure and text her about that, and so we know what we're doing in 6 months. So.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I feel like that's not just you. That's kind of just like an every person in the world kind of thing.
Sure,
like,
sure.
No matter how much you want to lie to yourself and be like, everything's perfect. Like, really? Get the fuck out of here. Like, obviously, you know.
Yeah, that's what I like about how when she's talking about the things that she misses from the U.S., and that's she misses the sort of phony bullshit, to where they're like, how you doing? Great. How you doing? Great. Yeah. You know,
and it's like, people in Europe are like, ho-hum, like, Eeyore.
Yeah, people in Europe are just like, oh, fuck it.
Fuck you. I live in Europe.
Yeah. So another one of the notes that I have down here is I love that These are the two most open and honest people that I've ever seen on screen.
Yeah.
Because it's like, anything you want to know, they will tell you right away. And I like that. And I like that, you know, this is the sort of film where they have to be like that. It can't be, what do you think about this? Oh, I don't really want to talk about it. Oh, I don't know. You know, they can't do that for the movie.
Right.
So, I guess, what did you think of this here? I love that as the film goes on, you sort of slowly figured out how filled with regret he is. And it slowly starts coming out how actually unhappy he is.
Yeah, because at the beginning, you know, you see him and you're like, oh, you know, he's a published author, asshole. And
yeah, really. I was like, this fucking dickhead.
Yeah, yeah, every time I see anybody on a movie that's a writer, I'm like, you know, and he's married with a kid. And, you know, when he talks about them at the beginning, you know, he's not being fake, but he's not being 100% truthful.
Yeah, he's presenting that ideal self.
Right, and then after a while when she, like, she's apparently, like, the best person to break down boundaries for him, and he just, like, basically tells her, like, how it is.
Yeah,
and she, like, goes off on him.
Oh, yeah, she loses it a couple of times.
Well, the one in the cab was, like, the worst. She, like, blames him for, like, not being able to have any sort of relationships. Yikes.
Yeah. Yeah, to where she, at the beginning, she's, like, not really that upset about the book. Like, she's kind of flattered about it, and she lies about her memory of that night.
Yeah.
You know, because she claims to not remember having sex with him. And then...
That's hurtful.
Yeah. And then, at the end, you realized how pissed she is about having to relive that night, basically.
Yeah. Well, and it kind of makes the whole laughing at the beginning about him not showing up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, that was just, like, nervous. She didn't know what to do because, like, she, you know, really did want to be there.
Right, yeah.
She wrote a song about it.
Oh, yeah. And so one of the things that I think that is interesting and complicated is I like that he tells her that, you know, he's in love with his wife and he admires his wife, but it's obviously, like, he's not in love with her the same way that he's in love with Celine.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like such a horrible situation for him to be in because, you know, he talks about how, like, him and his wife sleep together, what did he say, like, 3 times a year or something?
Yeah, like, he likes being away from her. And
yeah, he likes, you know, he likes the son that they have, and he's right. Kind of, like, thankful for the
he's
life.
Cool. Like, he's legit.
And he's like, he likes the life that they have, but he just kind of wishes that it was someone else. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Like, that's such a tough spot.
Right.
For him.
Because, like, I don't know, like, how do you know for sure, I guess. But, yeah. I can take this movie two ways. And I want to, like, with a lot, just take it as, like, wow, they were soulmates and they met and that whole night, like, fucked it up for both of them because they were supposed to be together and it didn't work out. So, as a result, they have to live, you know, like 70% happy life.
Yeah, that's a really good way to. Yeah, that's really a good way to describe it, actually.
And that's how I want to feel it. And then, like, there's this tiny bit of me, that little bitch that doesn't like romantic movies. That's like, really, one fucking night, and you're gonna like allow that?
Yeah.
But I usually push it aside because I really do like this movie. So, like, that little bit, I always am like, shut up.
It's like that little bit of sense of disbelief that you just kind of have to go with.
Right. And I'm like, one night they hang out and they're in love. Like, I'm still trying to work it out, Brad, you know.
Right.
5 years.
Well, it's funny, you know, one of the lines that I like that Celine says is, she says it's not easy being a romantic. You know? And that makes me think that, oh, you know, she is the type that would fall immediately. And, you know, she looks it. I mean, she looks like, you know, Julie Delpy, I think, is an attractive woman, but she does look quite a bit older. Like,
yeah,
she looks good, but she kind of lost that sort of baby fat in her face.
Right. That, like, cute little French girl.
Right.
Thing she had going on. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, it looks like she's been through some shit and it looks like she does have regrets. And, you know, when she's losing her mind in that cab and she's, you know, all pissed about, you know, the whole love of your life stuff. And, you know, you come here to Paris and romantic and married. And she says, screw you to him. And, you know, that really hits hard because it's like, she is living in that 80% or 70% world that you described, and you know, that's a tough way to go.
Right, and she's happy, but not like as happy as she knows that she could be.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like almost worse. Not, it's not, but it's almost worse than being horribly sad. It's like being, knowing you could be happier than you are.
Right. Yeah. And that's what I think is brutal. Like the toughest part for me is when, like the part that I feel so bad for him is when he's talking about the dreams that he has about her.
Yeah.
And those are brutal. And I'm like, oh man, like that's so hard to sit and think about. You know, he has a dream where they're laying together and he touches like her ankle or something.
Yeah.
And then she like turns away from him or something. Like, I forget, I didn't write down the line exactly, but basically it's like she's either regretting him or turning him away or not being with him as he wants them to be. And, mm-hmm. you know, the fact that, you know, that dream and that sort of thing is going on while he hasn't seen her. I mean, it's not like, you know, I can only imagine what their relationship would be like after this, like him and his wife.
Yeah.
After this scene. So I guess let's talk about the end. You know, she ends up getting him back to her apartment, and it's kind of like French messy and cutesy kind of.
Right. It's really, knickknacks.
Yeah. There's fucking shit everywhere is what there is. Yeah. And
he says merci, and she's like, messy?
Yeah. And then she says, oh, you're really become a master of the language.
Yeah. God, idiot. But it's like, so funny because, like, I'll get in the cab and take you to your apartment. Okay, I'll walk you to your apartment. Okay, I'll come up for just a second. Okay, I'll have, like, you know, he doesn't want to leave. He doesn't want to go anywhere.
Yeah. Well, and then he ends it in the last scene of the film where she says, you're going to be late for your plane. And he says, I know.
And it was perfect.
Yeah.
And then they hit the credits and I'm like, fuck yeah, that did. And it was like, it was a great ending. I thought it was.
What did you think about the waltz that she sings?
It could have been about 1 minute, not as long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
But I mean, like the whole thing about it, you know, like how she was giving him all that shit for writing that book, and then she's writing guitar songs about him, like.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I love that thing where they do. What does he say? You play that for all the guys that come up here, and then
yes.
Before that, said something like you say that to all the girls, and so like I thought that was, you know, because it's obviously like really open and sort of awkward when she's doing that, like, uh-huh. you focus on him and you're like, don't do anything weird, and so like when he says that, it like breaks the tension a little bit where you're not like, okay, God. Like,
yeah, because so, in the first film it's when they give that money to that poetry writer.
Yes.
And he's like, you know, he just throws in that milkshake in there, you know, I know, right. That he wrote it, you know, and it's the opposite of that, of yeah. That scene. I love that she in this environment when she's done singing is just so open and sort of unashamed. It just doesn't give a fuck. You know, she's impersonating that woman on the CD and she's fucking dancing and just doesn't care.
But it's only because she's with him. Like,
well, right. Yeah. I just love how they are together to where she can, you know, she can just be doing silly stuff and, you know, she's laughing all the time and she's just soaking in every moment that they're together.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I really like that. Like it's one where I really like the first movie and I really like the second movie, and I can't really, like, I like them for slightly different reasons, but I really enjoy these two.
Yeah. So. I don't know. I liked the second one better. I think it was the ending where, yeah. Like, I loved how there was no kissing, you know, there wasn't anything, like, they were touching each other. I don't even think they touched, like, a really whole lot in the movie, the second one,
mm-hmm.
You know, but then, like, she just says, you're going to be late for your plane, and then it cuts to the credits, and, like, your mind just, like, races with, like, all the shit that's going to be going on.
Right, yeah.
That's so, the day, like, when the third one comes out, you're like, what?
Yeah, so in another, that was 2004, so in another 8 years, probably, is they'll probably set it in 2012, so another 8 years after that. To see where those two characters are now.
Right. It's nuts.
It'd be interesting. So, do you have anything else you have to say about that one, Cruiser?
No, that probably is my favorite. Because, like, even, honestly, you said if you don't like Ethan Hawke, he's not my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually have to give him a lot of credit for this, because like right when I saw him in the first movie, I'm like, okay, you got to focus. But like he was so, it was so easy to like watch him play this character.
Yeah.
Like, I think he did a good job.
It makes me feel like I want Julie Delpy and Ethan Hawke to be like this in real life. Like, yeah. This is
he
who
didn't
I want
run
them to
fingers
be.
Through his hair, like, very much at all. So, like, that's what I was really proud of him for.
Especially in the second one where he's got, like, a more normal haircut. You know, yeah. It's one where I watched that first movie and I don't really think anything of it about it being very 90s looking. And then I watched the second one and I'm like, oh, now they look normal. Like, wow, they looked fucking weird in that first movie.
Right, right. They were borderline angsty looking in the first movie. Yeah. But the second one looked a lot more normal.
Well, I think, I think what happens is, you know, I see the second film and then that makes me look back and think, oh, yeah, you know, this is how they were in their 20s and now they're more grown up and they're
right.
Kind of,
yeah, you know. It actually works a whole lot for the movie that they look, you know, so some obviously similar, they're the same people, but so much different.
Mm-hmm.
They did actually age, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Well, I don't have anything else, Cruz, so I'm going to wrap this baby up.
Alrighty.
All right. Well, if you have any comments for the show or movies that you'd like to hear us talk about, you can email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the show over at Twitter under the handle @plainlabelpod. You can also follow me. I'm @EricWilliams79, and Cruz is @CruzBallTable. We do have a Facebook page where you can like the show as well. Just search for Plain Label Podcast. You can also friend us over there. If you enjoyed the show and wanted to help us out a little bit, you could head over to our website, which is plainlabelpodcast.tumblr.com. And you're going to find some Amazon links over there to these four movies that we talked about. And if you buy either of those movies or any of those movies or all of those movies that we talked about on the podcast, we do get
it.
Yeah, you could do it. You could buy Before Sunset and Before Sunrise. That'd be a good idea.
Yeah.
So if you buy any of those films, or you could buy the movie where Kate Winslet looks like a dude. if you do that, we do get some of that money from Amazon, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So, again, we would appreciate you spreading the word so you could tell anyone and everyone you know that might enjoy the podcast and write us an iTunes review. 5 stars or Cruz will be pissed.
Yeah.
And that's really the best way to get the word out about our little show here. So thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with 4 more romantic dramas.
I'm not impossible. Okay, you know what bus you're taking to the airport?
Yeah, no problem.
You should get on this one.
Right here? You want to get on it? All right.
Yeah. Okay. I guess this is it now.
Yeah. I really... I mean, you know.
Yeah, I know it. I have a great life. I've done with everything you're gonna do.
All right. Work good luck hard. With school and all that.
Okay.
Oh, I hate this.
Me too. The train is about to leave.
Listen, you know all this bullshit we're talking about not seeing each other again? I don't want to do that.
I don't want to do that either.
You don't either.
I was waiting.